been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Friday. It's the weekly wrap show of the Best Stocks Now and what we've seen here this past week in the market. I'm Bill Gunderson, professional money manager, last 21 years. I'm here with Barry Kite.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. He is our chief financial analyst. And, boy, we got a lot to talk about. It has been a very, very busy week in the markets here. And we'll just take a look at what we're looking at here as we kind of wind up the week. We're going to have a down week overall in the market, but we're finishing up strong on this. As I speak right now, the Dow's up 81. The NASDAQ is up about 22 points. There are a few stocks here that stand out to me today. Let me check interest rates. That's really important after the week we had with inflation. Where is that 10-year today? You know, it's pretty flat, it looks like. But we saw a 14 basis rate rise on the day that inflation number came out on Wednesday. And then, thankfully, on Thursday, the bond market was closed. So, that kind of stopped the carnage there in the bond market. And we definitely want to talk about that inflation print that we saw on Wednesday and whether we need to eliminate the word transitory from our talk. Yes, about the markets. And I definitely want to update the earnings season because that holds the key. You know, you can talk about inflation and Fed policy and this and that. At the end of the day, it's earnings that have been driving this market higher for the last 12 years. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson of Gunderson Capital Management and a chartered financial analyst, Barry Kite. And Barry, you know, I'm going back to 2008 now. 2008 was the last time we saw an earnings drop from the previous year. And then, of course, earnings collapsed in 2009. We got clear down to $53 per share. That's the S&P 500 earnings, actual earnings. And this year, we're looking at about $200 per share in earnings. And next year, about $220 per share in earnings. And to me, there is no bigger reason as to why the market has rallied since 2009 when we saw that bottom in earnings. And earnings have been rising ever since, except for that COVID year of last year, which was an extraordinary event, which, in accounting terms, we call that an extraordinary item in the footnotes. And we're looking to return, at least for now, record earnings this year, record earnings next year. And we're looking for an advance in 2024. We already have estimates out. And not only does the market trade on this earnings record that we've had of growing earnings since 2008, but also, even more importantly, on earnings expectations, right? Earnings expectations. The market it's been my observation. Tell me if you agree with this, that the average individual investor is looking at today and what's happening in the market today and yesterday and what might happen tomorrow. When the actual market and the professionals in the market, the big guys, the hedge funds and the institutional money managers, they're looking ahead 1 to 2 years, more like 2 years. Hasn't that been your observation over the years that you've been in the market?
Certainly, and that's, and it ties back to investor psychology, right? Certainly, in the pitfalls of some of those issues that the buying high, selling low, right? And you know, individual investors, right? Just from a timing standpoint, right? Usually, getting it wrong historically, right? And most of it about, emotion, right? Because it's like you said, you're looking at what's happening in the market today, right? Versus kind of what are the expectations going forward?
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, and that's like you say, it's about expectations. And when there's, if you're expecting this, right, and then there's some new information and those expectations have moved up, well, then in that case, right, the market's going, all else being equal, the market's reacting positively to that and vice versa versus just looking at, hey, and you always see it in an earnings report, right? Oh, they blew out in earnings, but the stock went down. And it's like, oh, well, they revised future expectations lower or what have
you,
right? There's usually
and conversely, mm-hmm. if they raise earnings guidance, the stock takes off to the upside.
Right. Yeah.
You saw me write three very kind of gutsy articles back in March of 2020. If we flash back to March of 2020, it looked like the whole world was going to come to an end, that everybody was going to die from the COVID, and we had another Spanish flu situation. How could you ever be bullish on the market? But I wrote some articles there, and we're regular contributors to Seeking Alpha, which is now, I think, the biggest financial site in the world. It's definitely my go-to every day. And I wrote in March of 2020 that, in fact, late February, that the market has now bottomed. It's already priced in this pandemic, and it's looking ahead 2 years. And, I was exactly right. The market went on to double in the shortest amount of time it's ever taken for the market to double. And, I followed up that article the following week and the next week. I said, the bottom is in. What are you waiting for? It wasn't a very popular article.
Not at the time, for sure. Don't have your kids around when you read, if you look through those comments.
Yeah, and you've got to have a pretty good self-esteem. There were people calling for me to be banned from the site, and you're crazy. What are you drinking? What are you smoking? I don't drink or smoke, but you know what? I knew that the market was looking ahead, and I looked at the earnings. I watched the earnings estimates very closely during January and February as COVID came to our shores. But I already knew that 2020's earnings were going to collapse, absolutely collapse. We're shutting down our economy. I mean, how can they not collapse? But actually, earnings held up better than you would think because people bought from home, okay? We had an explosion in Amazon and in Target and Home Depot and Lowe's. But, obviously the travel industry and the restaurants and things like that, those were the areas to avoid. And we had new technologies emerge back then, like Zoom, and people went to Etsy to sell their wares. They went to Fiverr, Teladoc, and telemedicine. So there were a lot of opportunities that came out of that. And now you can pretty much say that the pandemic is kind of in the rearview mirror. Now we're pretty much back to normal operations. We've seen big booms this week and last week and last month in the hotel stocks and the leisure stocks and booking.com and Hilton hotels and the malls. Even the mall-based retailers like Dillard's are exploding to the upside. Yeah. So we're pretty much back. Now, of course, we've got the supply chain issues and we've got the inflation issues, which we're going to talk about in the second quarter of the show. But in my history in the market, 21 years, I was there for 2000, the 80% crash in the NASDAQ. There has been no better indicator for me as a guy who also looks at the macro outlook for the market than earnings expectations. And, in today's world, all those analysts are feeding their estimates into several locations. They're aggregated. We come out of that with a consensus earnings estimate for those all-important 500 companies that make up the S&P 500. And that's what I base my macro outlook on. You know, you can take a look at all the other indicators, technical indicators, Fibonacci numbers, you know, the Laffer curve. It goes on and on and on and on and on. But number one indicator of all, if people can learn this simple lesson, they'll be much better investors and they'll take a lot of the emotion out of the equation. It's earnings estimates. It's earnings expectations. And more importantly for the S&P 500, it's the aggregate earnings expectation. Now, I publish a newsletter every weekend, and it has that macro call. I've been right since 2008. What am I saying now? You can get 2 free weeks of my weekly newsletter that only goes to clients and subscribers for free at GundersonCapital.com, GundersonCapital.com. We'll be right back to discuss inflation and interest rates. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. And in this quarter, I want to talk a little bit about the relationship between the prevailing interest rate environment and the market, and what impact rising interest rates have on both the bond market and on the stock market. We've just finished another earnings season, which happens every 90 days in the market as companies count all the beans and report their earnings. Those earnings are compared with the same comparable quarter last year, and more importantly, they're compared with what the expectations were. And 85% of the companies beat their earnings estimates this quarter. And there's been quite a big lift in the earnings expectations because of the forward guidance that we've received from these companies. So the earnings picture for this year and next year is pretty solid. And then we look out to 2023, and we have some pretty good numbers out there to go by. That's in my newsletter. This is the most critical part of my newsletter. Go to the market outlook portion. I'm a guy who's called the macro outlook right since 2008, and I've produced a newsletter for the last 21 years that goes only to my clients as part of being a client of Bill Gunderson and Gunderson Capital Management, and it goes to my live trading subscribers, which I have a lot. We have a lot of do-it-yourselfers that follow us. And for them, they want to manage their own money. I send them out all my buys and sells during the week in the 6 or 7 portfolios that I manage. And I offer out my newsletter, two free weeks, a trial, for you to examine the portfolios, how they've done, what we currently own. But most importantly, that macro outlook, that's the question I get asked more than anything. Are we ready for a crash? Are we ready for a stumble? Are we ready for a correction? You get 2 free weeks of the newsletter at GundersonCapital.com. Okay, we saw a big event on Wednesday, Barry. We saw an inflation print that came in at the hottest number in the last, was it 30 years? 30 years?
It was over 30 years, 6.2%.
Okay, so you got to go back to 1992, would that be right? 1992, something like the late 90s,
yeah,
which is when we saw kind of the SNL crash and everything. We had a hot inflation print, and we saw the market sell off in a reaction to that. The stock market sold off on Wednesday, and the bond market sold off on Wednesday. And I think the expectations, Wells Fargo is now calling for 2 interest rate hikes next year and 2 more the year after that. Okay, now, Barry, as a chartered financial analyst, I'll put you on the spot here just a little bit, but I think this is a pretty easy one. what impact, if interest rates, they're still low. I mean, 1.50 is very low.
Yeah, historically, right, yeah.
Very low. But what impact, let's say interest rates, earlier this year they started to head towards 2. Let's say we go to 2 and north of 2 early next year. What impact will that have on the bond market?
Yeah, on the and so all else being equal, interest rates and bond prices move in opposite directions. So interest rates go up, right? Bond prices go down, and in terms of how much they move, and the other part of this equation is how long dated they are, right? So if you're in a 30-year bond, or if you're in a 10-year bond, and interest rates go up 1%, well, the 30-year bond's going to move more than the 10-year because of the fact that it's further out on the curve. But so the important thing is they're going to move in opposite directions. And we've been in such a low-rate environment. I mean, coming off of, you mentioned earlier this week, coming off of Volcker in the 80s, right, in terms of raising. Well, then you went on this, bond run, right?
40 years.
Yeah.
40 years.
Because you went from a Fed funds rate, I don't know. I mean, I know
it got up to almost 20%.
Yeah, and a treasury, you could buy like a 30-year treasury for 15% or something on it. And so, that fueled the bond market up to where we kind of are now. And those, historically we're low, but all of those yields and newly issued bonds are now low as well. So in terms of their sensitivity to these rates moving, you get a very similar parallel, even though, your rates aren't near as high as we talked about, say, in the 80s. But relatively, a 30 basis move in the basis point move in the interest rates, a big deal when you're already only getting, say, 3% on your bond in the first place.
Yeah, and I would also draw the distinction between a bond fund, which is very much sensitive. If you're going to hold your bonds to maturity, of course, the inflation eats into that principal a little bit. But at the end of the day, I mean, you're going to get back. And that's why we do run a bond fund. It's the smallest fund we do run. Mostly we do growth stock funds, but the bond fund, we plan on holding those bonds to maturity. Well, we've also sold a couple.
If we have to, certainly. In the worst case scenario, we know. In being able to hold them to maturity, right, you don't have, you're not as concerned about the intermediate price fluctuation.
Right. In all this asset allocation world that we live in, they go off of age. If you're 60 years old, you should have 40% of your money in bond funds. And I disagree with that thinking and that philosophy because that does not take into account market conditions and world conditions. If we get into a hot inflationary environment and you've got 40% of your money in bond funds because that's what the computer says, you're going to get clobbered on that 40%. Okay, now let's look at the relationship between interest rates and the stock market. We saw a fire drill in February and March of this year when all of a sudden the interest rates started to take off and moved up to about 1.85. And I would just say that my proxy for the high growth, high PE, I use ARK funds as a proxy. Her ETF sold off 38% earlier this year. Most people don't realize that. Why did the high PE, the transformational type stocks, sell off so violently as interest rates went higher earlier this year, Barry?
Well, and when it has to do with PE multiples. So, in creating and you do this every week in terms of what should the PE multiple be. Well, in that formula, interest rates are in the denominator. So, as interest rates go up, right, you're essentially bringing the total PE that one should use in your analysis lower. So for your high PE stocks, right, that are getting 100 PE, well, those things
the most
are getting
vulnerable.
Hit by interest rates,
yep.
For sure.
So when we come back, I want to expound a little bit more on where the vulnerable areas of the market, why interest rates are so important to watch, and where I see a couple of bubbles right now. It's all in the newsletter at GundersonCapital.com. Get 2 free weeks. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the second half of the Best Stocks Now show, where we've been talking about this past week, the inflation print we had, the impact on the bond market, the stock market, what impact rising interest rates have on those two markets. We've been talking about why the market has been going up for the last 12 years, since 2009. That's when earnings estimates for the S&P 500 bottomed at $55 per share. You know, you put a 20 multiple on it, let's say. The S&P was worth about, $1,000 back then. And now you've got an S&P trading at $4,500. Why? Because earnings have quadrupled during that period of time. The market and stocks follow earnings. That's why you get a stock like IBM that has not increased its earnings in the last 10 years. The stock is flat. And that's why you get a stock like NVIDIA, for instance, that has increased their earnings at an exponential rate for the last several years. The stock has gone up at an exponential rate. There is a direct correlation between earnings growth or earnings expectation growth and stock performance. And that's why, you know, I call my show The Best Stocks Now. I call my weekly newsletter Best Stocks Now. I invented an app called Best Stocks Now. And we're looking for those characteristics of the best stocks in the market today. You know, there's a lot of great stocks from yesteryear that were transformational in their day. But this is 2021, getting ready to turn the corner on 2022. And it's a whole new world, and there's a whole new group of leadership stocks out there. And, you know, in the portfolios that we manage, whether it be the dividend and growth portfolio or the ultra growth portfolio, we're looking for the best 20 or 25 stocks to stock those portfolios, given that discipline that each portfolio is in. Just like a baseball manager or general manager is looking to put the best stocks in on the field. When they begin the season, those guys that line up for opening day, you know, they've culled a lot of players to get to those 20 to 25. And then, of course, the All-Star game culls it even more, and the best of the best. And I can just say from experience that there's a lot of mediocrity in the market. There's an awful lot of mediocrity in the market. My app has 6,000 different stocks, mutual funds, ETFs. I use it, beststocksnowapp.com. I use it exclusively to, pick and do my research on the companies that I eventually end up buying in my portfolio. And we are looking for the very, very best of the best. And we also are active in maintaining it. You know, we don't buy in like an index and just sit on it. We have to do a little maintenance along the way, just like a garden. Sometimes you have to weed. Sometimes companies disappoint. Sometimes things in the world change. And before we went to break, we were talking about that sudden rise in interest rates in February and March of this year. I don't know what caused it. You know, all of a sudden there was a little bit of a panic and maybe fear of the Fed, and the interest rates went up pretty sharply, about 0.5% back in February and March. And the casualties, okay, this is a fire drill. What went down the most? It was the high P.E. It was the winners from last year, the big winners from last year that had exploded, the giant multiples, the Teladocs of the world, the Zoom technologies of the world. The whole market changed at that point. And we cashed in on a lot of big winners. We had a monster year last year. We cashed in on a lot of those. Whereas others, you know, because they own or run a transformational frontier-like of mutual fund or ETF, they stay in those stocks, and they got clobbered. You know, I would say the average high PE, highfalutin stock was down 35-40%, which tells you that you want to be on the alert for interest rates, any change in interest rates. If interest rates start to rise again, you're going to see a massive sell-off. If I were to pick two bubbles out there right now, you know, you have to say the electric vehicle. Barry, we saw Rivian go public on Wednesday, and it came public at double the market cap of Ford. Okay, how many cars has Rivian produced so far?
I mean, at least one, because we had the listener who said he saw one driving down the road. I've seen three driving Captain Kirk out to the rocket ship.
That's right.
That's four.
Now, we know that Rivian's got a bright future. Amazon plans on converting a lot of their delivery trucks to Rivian electric trucks. And, you know, everybody's getting into this pickup truck market. It's always been very lucrative for Ford. That's their kind of their moneymaker.
F-150.
You've got Lordstown Motors Ride. You've got Elon Musk with his truck. You've got Rivian with theirs. It's going to be a very crowded field. You had Tesla hit $1 trillion in market capitalization. We saw Elon Musk choose that as an opportunity to unload. Now, we don't know what his motive was, but he did choose the new highs in Tesla recently to unload $5 billion worth of stock. So I'm just stating that this is the kind of areas of the market that will be very, very vulnerable, you know, and if there's a bubble out there that's similar to the dot-com. In my mind, I was there in 2000 when the dot-com bubble imploded. And there's a lot of fluff built up into the electric vehicle sector, the battery charging sector, the hydrogen fuel cells, things like this. And I'm not going to be very popular with what I say next. I don't care. I'd rather be right than be popular. I wasn't very popular in the year 2000, or I mean not the year 2000, last year when I said the market has bottomed. We're going to rally from here. That was March of last year. I think the digital currencies are a massive bubble. That doesn't mean they're not going to continue to go higher. You know, I get asked about the digital currencies more than anything else, any other question out there in the market. And I think that at some point has a big potential to come unraveled. Bitcoin's now what, or is it the entire digital currency market's a $3 trillion market? That's how much money is tied up in that stuff.
Yeah, and it's and to me, it's, you know, and it's outside of, I mean, you think about it, it's outside of, you know, just Bitcoin and Ethereum, right? So, you know, you can, to me, you take those as more mainstream, right? Kind of the Nike symbol and the, you know, of the Nike symbol of the cryptos, right? But all the other ones that, you know, you can't, you know, that you hear about here and there, Shimu, Emu, you know, all these different random names, you know, those are, I mean, those are the definition of speculation in my book, right? They all have their various technologies that could work, right? For, you know, they might be built on top of the Ethereum network, and, you know, most of them are used for a particular purpose. And who knows if that particular purpose or technology is going to work out. I mean, it's no different than, you know, the 15 EV names. Well, there's one that we know makes money, and that's Tesla.
Yeah.
Other than that, we don't know. You know, you just don't.
You've got some stocks, you know, that are soaring, expected to be big players like Lucid and now Rivian and a few others. But, you know, it's definitely some bubble. Now, having said that, you might think, well, Gunderson must really be a bear. No, we're still, last I looked, we're about 90% invested in the market, but, you know, in what we consider to be the best stocks now. But we also watch interest rates very, very closely, because that's going to impact the multiples. Right now, you know, the historic multiple for the S&P has been in the 16 to 18 range, more in the 16 range, really. We're at 22 right now. We're at 22 times forward earnings. What has allowed that? Our friends at the Fed. I mean, every big giant bout of inflation, it's caused by the Fed. It's caused by loose money for too long, too much money sloshing around, and there's certainly evidence of that. I am seeing a plethora of IPOs coming out right now. I mean, a lot of them are second and third rate. We're still seeing SPACs come to the market. We're seeing all the speculation in the digital currencies. We saw Rivian come public at $100 billion on Wednesday. There is a way too much money sloshing around right now. It's a very inflationary environment. We remain bullish, but always have our eyes in the rearview mirror, and we have a plan should things start to come unraveled. When we come back, I'll talk about that. In the meantime, get the newsletter, GundersonCapital.com, GundersonCapital.com. We'll be right back.
You got to go.
And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. And, you know, we have two kinds of listeners. We obviously do a Monday through Friday show daily, live every morning. I do it at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can find the podcast, Best Stocks Now, Bill Gunderson, on all the podcast sites. We also upload the show daily to GundersonCapital.com, and you can listen at your leisure or you can listen live, but we put a lot of research into the show every day. We try to be out there on the cutting edge of what's taking place in the market, which stocks are moving, new stocks coming online, earnings estimates, the macro picture, economics. Sometimes we have big political events that are impacting the markets. I see there's a couple of hot spots in the world again. Belarus is one. Ukraine is another one, which could have some massive impacts on the world and the market. That's why I don't believe in being a passive investor. I think you have to be somewhat active as different things in the world change. We've kind of warned about, you know, what is vulnerable right now. I mean, it's still the best place to be. A lot of the growth areas of the market, but we got to really watch interest rates. That's the key. If interest rates start to climb higher again, you could see a shrinkage of the multiple, the multiplier, and that could cause a contraction, in, like we saw in February and March. Bonds are also very vulnerable in a rising interest rate environment. Now, conversely, financials, banks, they've had a nice run. The Goldman Sachs of the world, the money managers and whatnot, they benefit. They do better. It helps their earnings. Rising rates, which we haven't seen for a long, long time. And I'm seeing some perkiness here for the first time in quite some time in the precious metals. The stocks are moving. Silver is starting to move higher. I think we're in an inflationary environment. I really do. Wheat hit a 10-year high recently. There's wheat ETFs. Commodities do very well in an inflationary environment. And if things start to really pick up with interest rates and inflation, you know, we will use an inverse NASDAQ ETF, PSQ, for instance. Many of you were around in 2000. I was, as a professional money manager. I witnessed the NASDAQ and the dot-com bubble. The NASDAQ went down 79%. Those stocks did not come back. So we know how vulnerable bubbles in the market. That was the dot-com bubble. In 2008, we saw a 53% sell-off in the S&P 500. That was a mortgage and single-family home bubble that exploded, nearly brought our financial system down, brought it to its knees. In fact, I think the Treasury Secretary did get down on his knees and beg for the TARP funds at one point in time, which kind of saved the system at that time. And, you know, bubbles just happen. It's a natural thing. It's the greed and the fear cycle. And there are some bubbles building again here today. And how high they're going to go, I don't know. We'll continue to watch it. But that's why I think you got to have somebody looking over your investments, either yourself, you know, get some good advice from somewhere, follow some good people, or turn it over and find a fee-based money manager who is vigilant and watching for these kinds of things so you don't get caught in another 2000. Well, you know, stay the course is what people were told. We've put you into this asset allocation, and it fits your age and your risk tolerance. Stay the course. I do believe that there's such a thing as market timing. You do not want to be heavily invested in stocks when the earnings expectations for the S&P 500 start to crumble. And likewise, you don't want to be heavily invested in the bond market if inflation continues to rear its ugly head. It can turn into a monster like it did in the 70s. You don't want to be in the bond market if interest rates start to rise either. So, you know, we have, whether you're a do-it-yourselfer, you know, I have my daily radio show. We have the weekly newsletter. We have the app that we developed, which also has the market signal in it every day. You can get all of the tools we offer at GundersonCapital.com, and you can get 2 free weeks of the newsletter. But we're also fee-based money managers. A lot of people, they don't have time to watch the markets and interest rates and the inflation print and the CPI and the PPI and what's going on in the Ukraine and natural gas prices and wheat prices and corn prices and you know, ships stacked up at the Long Beach Harbor and all this and that. That's our job, to take that off your back and to be, you know, a reasonable fee-based money manager. We're fiduciaries. We don't buy any commission products. It's just fee-based. We use all publicly traded companies. We use a few ETFs from time to time in some of the smaller accounts, and we also hedge from time to time with some of the inverse ETFs. The inverse of the Dow is DOG. The inverse of the S&P is SH. The inverse of the NASDAQ is PSQ. If the NASDAQ goes down 20%, the inverse ETF will go up 20%. So there's a lot of tools that we have at our disposal these days, you know, to be active investors in the market and not only make money while the sun is shining, which it still is, okay? It's still shining, Barry. We hit a new high this past week at our firm in money under management. I think our portfolios are hitting a new high for the year, finally, this past week. And we're still pretty bullish on the market. But having said that, this is a 12-year-old bull, okay? Interest rates, the multiple is at an extreme right now. We have to be on our guard. Get the newsletter. That's a good place to start. You can see what we currently own, the portfolios that we manage. You can go to GundersonCapital.com. We also have a nationwide toll-free number. We manage money for folks all across America. And Barry is not only a certified, chartered financial analyst, he's also a certified financial planner. So that's a very good combination and a reason for you to give us a call at 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST, GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day. Have a great weekend.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.